the parts of lotus blossom I'm talking about are the parts that over the years have always really stood out for me. I think it's, many people have said about Rimesser's diary from Japan, the parts that she published, that what really hit them was just the incredible faith. And that's what I draw from the first part of Lotus Blossom. It's the incredible faith. Faith in herself, faith in the eternal, faith in the people who are looking after her and guarding her at this time. Faith in all of her disciples who, you know, she cut loose at this time. For a while, anyway. We had to trust. I was at the Abbey at the time, and I remember how I had to just trust. Things were going to work out, even if I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know if I'd ever see her master again. I just had to trust. Things were going to work out. And, boy, within a year's time, within a few months, I began to see just what that kind of faith led to. It might have scared the hell out of me initially, but then when I knuckled down to it, I really found that faith in myself. That same faith that she was showing, I found in myself. And so since that time, I've known, in a way you can only know through your own experience, I've known that every human being has the capacity for that kind of faith. There really is nothing special about River Master. Well, of course, I say that, and part of me thinks, what a magnificent human being. At the same time, I say there's nothing special. But the potential that she actualized, we all have within us, and we can actualize it. We're on plate 2, which is page 5. But I'm sure, Susan, I'm just going to read this before I say anything. It's called Scaling the Glass Mountain. There is nothing for it but to go straight up the face. How do I climb that which is sheer and glassy? By going straight up, by not thinking whether I will live or die, by not thinking I am inadequate or adequate, male or female. Maleness and femaleness cannot help me here. Here the world of the opposite ceases. There is no way for one who is stuck. There is no way up for one who is stuck in inadequacy or inadequacy. Up and up and up, without ever doubting my ability, without looking down, without thinking, without caring about the lightning that comes from the storms, without fearing the ferocious animal that I may meet, without worrying about the darkness or the avalanches, holding fast to the memory of the Kensho, up and up and on. Will the climb to the top never end? Perhaps everyone else was right. Perhaps to go on off into despair. But I know this is wrong and will not listen to the voice that whispers, go back, you are too weak, you cannot do it. You have not been good enough to climb this mountain. You have not done enough to train yourself. You do not know how to climb. And I say, quiet, I can climb and I will. This is covering a period very early in Rib Master's retreat, right at the beginning of her retreat, where she could hardly move, actually. So, she's obviously not physically climbing anything. This is a metaphor for what she's going through spiritually. So I want to talk a little bit about what that is. I think, first of all, I want to say that nothing conveys it better than the metaphor. And the wonderful thing about the metaphor is that it covers any particular situation where things are this extreme. It covers them all. It shows the attitude. with each of these metaphors, you know, the important thing is the teaching. As she herself says about the visions, I'll remind you about this. I do not doubt that every person sees and experiences this somewhat differently to me, although the stages for doing so are identically the same. And then later on she says, one must go on beyond the experiences. They should be learned from but not clung to. The teaching is all that matters. So again, with each of these plates, with each of the pictures that goes with it, with each of the descriptions of the vision or the metaphor that's covered, that manifested at the time, and I'm not saying that visions are only metaphors, by the way. Remember, I'm not saying that. But for each of them, it's the teaching that is the essential thing to focus on. So what is the teaching here? This is someone faced, well, someone face to face with the very real possibility of imminent death, and who is being drawn deeply inwards into a great darkness, a great spiritual darkness, going through layers of terror, layers of self-doubt, layers of grief and of fear. Verben Master says that when this Kensho broke, and I know that she's speaking the literal truth, when this Kensho broke, she cried for 48 hours round the clock, nonstop. The incredible release of grief, the sadness of ages stored up, waiting for to finally get its opportunity to flow into the ocean of the compassion of the eternal. In the midst of this great spiritual darkness, there is, how do I proceed in the face of such a great darkness? How do I proceed with such, in the midst of such powerful feelings arising? Remember, this is karma coming due. Feeling is a reaper of karma. I've said so many times, and it's true. When you get down to the pure feeling, unalloyed feeling, that's karma being reaped. So, her whole life had been leading to this point where she's drawn inwards in this way. Her body's so weak that she can hardly move. She's lying there facing the possibility of death. She says that she got to a point where she's unable to speak. Rim Master Daisy was looking after her at this time. He was down in the Berkeley Priory, where he was prior. She said that when she first came in, she got a real strong message, get to Berkeley, get there fast. She'd been down in the L.A. area, and they did an overnight trip. Her chaplains drove her up overnight, and she said that when she came in the door, she collapsed into Rim Master Daisy's arms and said, whatever you do, don't call the whoever it was, the men in the white coats, basically. In other words, saying to him, this may look crazy. It's not crazy. Don't hospitalize me here. Then shortly thereafter, she was, drawn into really deep retreat. And this is a description of someone who's really just giving up everything. At this point, she's cut her disciples loose for fear that when she's in such a weak state, someone may issue orders in her name. And try to manipulate us in some way. So she's really resigned as Abbot of Shasta Abbey in order to protect us, her disciples. And when she did, she had to trust that we'd trust her. And that we'd find our way if she died. And a tremendous trust she had to have in us and in herself. To allow herself to be drawn into this deep retreat. And if she'd tried to hold it off, she almost certainly would have died at this point. You know, this was a cut all ties, give up everything. Literally. So having done that, here you are face to face with this immense spiritual darkness, and you feel so helpless. And so alone, what do you do? Well, what happens is your heart starts to cry out to the eternal. Your whole being starts to cry out to the eternal. And this is how you start climbing. You climb on that cry of the heart. She talks about not forgetting the Kensho. For each person, there'll be something given. The Eternal will give you a little light. For one person, it may be the memory of a Kensho. For some person, it may be something else. But for each person, the Eternal will provide a little light to hang on to. It may just be a little phrase of teaching. Whatever it is, the Eternal will provide something. You hold on to that for dear life, and you spiritually climb. And you climb on faith. You climb on that cry of the heart to the eternal. There would not be this immense longing for the eternal that arises at such a time if there were not the eternal that meets the longing, that can meet the longing. You have to trust what's coming up in your heart that's rising, and you have to ignore what is will drag you into looking down. You have to look up, not down. You have to rise, not sink. And you rise on this upwelling of faith. And on this upwelling of longing for the eternal. The thing I heard her master say most often when she came back to the abbey a few months into her retreat, with her health much restored, the thing that she said most often was, just long for the eternal. Just long for the eternal. Now, where did that teaching come from? It came from here, right here, what I'm reading here. That in us which rises to the eternal. She says, I will not listen to the voice that whispers, go back, you are too weak, you cannot do it. You have not been good enough to climb this mountain. You have not done enough to train yourself. You do not know how. Each of us has this kind of core of karmically inherited downward looking doubt and despair in us. Each of us has it in us. This is the time, you know, when one's right up against it, when nose right against the realities of birth and death, this is the time when you have to be able to say and willing to say no to the downward looking and yes to the upward. And it's not a no that's a despising no or a condemning no or a righteous no. It's just, sit still, you. I'm going. I'm dragging you with me. We're going to the eternal. I'm dragging you with me. This is the way we have to go. This is where our help and our salvation lie. In the arms of the eternal, not in the pit of despondency, despair, and doubt. As I said yesterday, you know, this is the time, and you know, we're in the midst of a time. If there was ever a good time in the life of our Sangha, it's now, to say respectfully no to doubt and despair, and yes to the call of the eternal. This is what releases this incredible love that's in our hearts. This is what releases it to do its good. The love not of our creation, an infinite love that owns us, we don't own it. And it's what releases it to do its work within the heart. It's also the source of all wisdom. To do that, what's it say? I'm trying to remember the exact words. To do something by oneself without following others, without copying others, is to be an example to the world. It's the source of all wisdom, doesn't it say that? What's the exact words of that? We'll look it up here. Normally I can spout it right off, but I'm kind of a little bit, my talk's gone a direction, my brain ain't quite functioning here. So. Yeah, the merit of doing such a thing become the source of all wisdom. Oh, to do something by oneself without copying others is to be an example to the world. And the merit of doing such a thing is a source of all wisdom. It becomes a source of all wisdom if you don't think it's in there. So, anyway, that's close enough. And that's Dogen's commentary? Or Kazan's, one of them, their commentary on the last of the 10 precepts. Do not defame the 3 treasures. Yeah, do not criticize, accept everything. And what we have in what I've just read from Lotus Blossom is a tremendous example of that. I mean, what can you do there except by yourself? There's nothing that can rescue you. Once you're in that situation, what can rescue you from that darkness? You know, nothing. You either face it there and climb that mountain, or you succumb to the despair and the doubt. You know, this is the real nature of renunciation, which he's describing. The real nature of spiritual renunciation. To turn away from those roads that lead into spiritual oblivion, and to take that hardest seeming road of all up that mountain. There's no road at all there. You just have to fly on faith. I hit this point myself in my own way at a kind of earlier level of training a few months after Rim Master got back in 1976. By then it was early 19. Just the beginning of February 1977, and I asked Rebbe Master, I just said, you know, there's this, I don't know the exact words I used, but for me it was like I was standing on this great cliff and having to leap off of it, and I asked her, how do you do this? The Red Master didn't say a word. She just stayed silent. And the answer came out of my own heart to my question. And I just said it. You have to live in free fall. Came out of my own heart. You have to live in free fall. And about 3 days later, I guess it was 2 days later, I had a Kensho. I had to decide, it didn't matter how great the darkness was. It didn't matter that I'd ever be enlightened or not. Nothing mattered. It didn't matter. I had to just, from moment to moment, hurl myself into the arms of the Eternal. And just as she told me at the beginning of this process for me, just not worry about external things. Just trust, like I'd never trusted before.